From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. My guest is John Malkovich. When we think about, we tend to think about the gaze, and there's a judgmental quality to that gaze, whether it's being used playfully in a comic sense or in a dramatic sense. And I think it's one of the most interesting tools an actor can have. And John, first of all, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Elvis. Pleasure.
The Coen brothers are very different kinds of directors, aren't they? I mean, one thing I've heard about people who come here and talked about them is that you start with white pages and you end with white pages, which is that there are not a whole lot of changes, right?
No. I've worked with directors who are really control freaks, meaning kind of to the level of sort of emotional instability, I would say. But they seem to me to have generally a really good idea what they want or a really good notion of how to find what they want. At the same time, though, they always seem pretty up for accidents and surprises, meaning, you know, when you go and shoot something, things happen that are really unexpected, and they always seem quite cheered by that. It may not be what they use in the end, but they're cheered by it. Whereas I would say people who control too much, I always have the question bouncing around in my head, why are they doing this film? It's already made. I mean, there it is on the storyboard. And no change or accident or surprise would be countenanced. And that, of course, isn't fun at all. But the Coens aren't like that.
We tend to think of the Coens as directors, especially in comedies, having a real precision to not only the dialogue, but the physical action as well.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Absolutely. The dialogue, I don't think there were any changes. And if lines are changed, even accidentally, they may like it or dislike it, but they'll always note it. I mean, they'll always know exactly. They know the script backwards and forwards. And a lot of times, and usually it's Ethan who does this probably more than Joel, he will involve himself more in the actual syntax or the actual phraseology of how a line is written or delivered, maybe a little more than Joel will. Not always, but probably in general a little more. But see, I like that because to me it means they're watching and listening. And the directors, at least I've had, I won't say the most success, but the directors I prefer, people like that or like Stephen Frears, who, you know, will come up after a take and say, you did 8 circles. I would have thought you might have done 9. Okay, you said this, and I was thinking perhaps you might have said this so that it could be construed to mean X, not Z. A lot of directors, I think, don't even notice things like that.
You prefer directors who really know how to pay attention to actors, and you must have worked with a lot who do not.
Yeah, because that's not their training, of course. I mean, their training is the frame. Or their training might just be in rock video or in playing the studio for chumps or getting something done. You know, there are a lot of different sort of fields of expertise in the movies. And to a massive extent, the field of expertise is not directing performances, by and large.
It's The Treatment. My guest is actor John Malkovich. He's co-starring in the new Coen Brothers film, Berman After Reading. Now, you're talking about a kind of a training, and their training is really in making films. I guess they've done this and gotten better at it, and you can see their ease with actors improving over the 25 years or so they've been making films. They ask a kind of concentration of actors.
Absolutely. You don't want to go in to their set sort of unprepared. They want to get going and go quickly and not goof around. In the same way that, say, Clint Eastwood, I did a film with him, and I'd work with him before
as an actor in A Line of Fire.
When he was always impeccably prepared. And on this film, The Changeling, that I did with him, right after it happened, I called every producer friend I have to recount the story to them. But that day we'd done an 8-page scene, almost all of which was my dialogue, and it was just me with Angelina Jolie, and it's a kind of montage sequence, but quite long, quite elaborate, 8 pages or so of text, a lot of which will be voiceover, but which we shot images to go with some of it. And we started probably shooting about 9, so I was there whatever time I was there and got ready, and we did a kind of quick, he showed us what we were going to do, et cetera, et cetera. And at 2:45 in the afternoon, I'll never forget this, he goes, "That's lunch, and that's a wrap." And, you know, my knees just buckled. I thought, I never thought I would live to hear that. This is a guy who, the work is done. Now we're finished. We're going home. We're not going to shoot till 7 or 8 at night. It's done. And he's happy with it, and he's fine. They certainly are not going to cut any corners or anything. I mean, they're very attentive, vigilant, deliberate people. But they really, really watch what you're doing, and they see the difference between this and that. And a lot of actors just don't, a lot of directors, sorry, don't have the training or the interest or the ability to even do that. You know, you get directions like, could you be angrier? Yeah, sure. I could always be angrier. Could you be sadder? Yes, I could be, but to what end? I mean, what is it? You know, acting, it sounds idiotic to say, it's action and reaction. You know, what is your action? What do you want in this scene? And then how do you go and get it? A lot of directors just aren't, it's not as if they don't want to watch, or maybe that they're not interested. They really don't know how to. They never directed a play. They never talked to actors. They never said, you know, my experience, say, is you cast this person and then you go about with he or she and construct a performance. Who they are isn't really very relevant. It's how the character views the world and how you communicate that. Whereas movies play a lot more on your, quote, image, or on the audience's, say, image of you, then, of course, you may be able to change that image, but you're still, in a way, acting on that image. Because even if you're doing the kind of mirror image or reverse image of
the way you're perceived.
That's still based on an image. Theater acting, think of it as a painter paints. Movie acting is more like a line drawing. You don't do it over a 6-month or 9-month or year long period so that it's constantly being refined and added to and subtracted from. You go in on that day and you do the scene and you don't go back to it.
Wow, it's the truth. My guess is actor John Malkovich, certainly he's also a director, producer. He produced Juno last year, his company, Mr. Mudd. As you were talking about this, one of the things I realized about Clint Eastwood as a director is his films tend to be, and most people don't think about them this way, incredibly dialogue heavy. I mean, there tends to be a lot of dialogue in Clint Eastwood
very
movies.
Funny.
Were you surprised to sort of get that from him, or did you have that perception of him before you went to work with him?
It could have something to do with the fact that he got so famous being a kind of man of few words, that maybe it was another part of him that had never been tapped or never been called upon.
Sure.
I think that could be part of it. But in fact, even though he's a quiet man, he's quite sensitive, I think, to literary things, to verbal things, to text, to how a text is being delivered in a way that would surprise you if you just sort of knew him. You know, I always am reminded of my father. I was just talking to someone the other day. I was talking about drive-ins. And I remember the last film, my father passed away many years ago. The last film I saw was one of Clint Eastwood's westerns, and it could have been High Plains Drifter. And I just remember my father, after 10 minutes, turning to me and saying, "Johnny, there is not enough killing in this movie. And I said, well, Dad, you know, chill. And I think, you know, in the time to come, I think we'll all leave, you know, quite satisfied. I'm sure there'll be plenty of killing in the movie. But the point being, then he later did The Unforgiven, which actually I had had a conversation about when Francis Coppola was going to direct it. And he called me and asked me to go see him here in New York. I lived here then at the Sherry Netherlands. And I went to see him. I read the script and thought it was a terrific script. But I said to him, you know, I can't do this. I mean, I'm just an actor. It doesn't mean anything when I put away my gun. You have to have somebody where that means something, it seems to me.
And you're talking about the kind of weight of the character, right?
Yeah, just sure. the myth of it. For the same reason that In the Line of Fire, yeah, it's great that I was in it, and it's great it's someone so irritating to him, but if it weren't Clint Eastwood, it wouldn't mean anything. It wouldn't have the emotional weight. In the same way, in The Unforgiven, I'll never forget seeing it in a big theater in L.A. And, you know, when he cocks that shotgun at the end, when he rides back into town and cocks the shotgun, I mean, people went berserk. It was up for grabs. They were just screaming for 10 minutes, kill them. And because he has that kind of Gary Cooper of it, he doesn't have to say anything. Maybe it's that when you get known for doing something, you know, it's maybe just a fluke that it's what you got known for, but it maybe doesn't have much to do with you. And, you know, he's a musician, he's a film student, and he's quite articulate, despite what the public may see or what his image may be. So maybe that's why. I mean, Changeling is pure dialogue.
So many of those films that he's directed not in could be plays. I mean, there's a lot of dialogue and sort of dialogue with people sort of saying things that are incidental character reflections rather than these kinds of expositional pieces of dialogue, which is the case of Changeling.
Yeah. It's funny because if I would talk to him about something normally during Changeling, it would be sort of, can I cut this? And even though I come from a sort of more theatrical and literary background, I actually like a minimum of text, what is needed.
Especially for film?
Yeah. If it's not really necessary, I don't see the point. It'll be cut anyway. And it's better to cut it before so the rhythm is achievable while you're shooting it rather than having to get rid of this and that and this and that. He's quite surprising in that way. And they're both quite similar, the Coens and Clint, in that I think they understand film profoundly. They don't shoot a bunch of stuff they're not going to use. They have that literary bent, but they don't waste a lot of time. I mean, the dialogue is pretty, I don't say austere, but it's very strict. It's what's necessary to tell the story, what's necessary to understand the characters, and what's necessary to make it compelling. And, you know, they can be really funny, as in Fargo, or they can do not so funny, like No Country for Old Men.
Or funny like this. We have to take a break, though. My guest is actor, director, producer, fashion designer, John Malkovich. More to come. It's a treatment which you can also hear at KCRW.com.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm welcoming back John Malkovich, who was last here as a director. He's now here as an actor. But what's it been like for you to go back to acting after directing?
Great, Elvis. I started out directing same time I started acting. For years, I only did it in the theater. and sort of did my apprenticeship in the movies in a way as an actor and just sort of finding out.
It almost seemed like you were working with directors that you wanted to work with who you, from whom you could learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
To a great extent, yeah. Robert Benton yeah. and Fierce, people like that.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got to work with Schlendorf and Wenders and Antonioni and Bertolucci and so many, Spielberg and so many terrific directors.
And they must have worked for you as kind of object lessons in so many ways.
Absolutely. How do they do it? What do they see? What's the frame to them? How do they move the camera? How do they tell a story? How do they interact with their crew and their actors, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's fantastic, fantastic learning. In the theater, I never really had that benefit, although I learned enormously from the actors and directors I started out with.
But that theater you did in Chicago was really almost like a player coach in those days because you were acting so much as you were on stage.
Sure. So for me, I always loved to do both, to sit in editing and watch Javier Bardem every day for months. To me, it was just an incredible delight. Or Laura Marante, talking about the people in my film, to get to watch them work, to me, is much better than doing it myself.
Really?
Yeah. Preference is a kind of a stronger word than I would use because the two jobs are so different. But I always love that. And to just sit in a theater and watch actors, I love working. It's fantastic to me. So it's never been difficult to do both, and you're constantly learning from the people you work with and the people you're around.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to actor John Malkovich. I guess though, so many people you've worked with, filmmakers, tend to have these teams, be it Spielberg or Schlondorf or Bertolucci. And I wonder for you, or the Coens for that matter, too, you know, they tend to collect a kind of a repertoire of technicians that they like to work with.
Yeah, very much.
And I wonder if that's something you kind of learned from too, because I once spoke to Vittorio Storaro, who said that for Bertolucci, that team was key. I mean, even the way they fought among themselves, that was a way that informed the filmmaking.
Yeah. I think that's true. I go either way, meaning I started Steppenwolf and I worked with really only those people for years and years and years, and I really knew them profoundly inside and out, and I think they knew me profoundly inside and out. And I always love that, and I love to get to go back and work with people that whose work I enjoy or whose work I care about. But I also like the that aspect and that possibility of working with people who are utter strangers to me. Going to a place where I don't know anyone and discovering other people and other ways of doing things. I've worked so much out of the country, in other languages, and with other cultures for so many years. And I really love that also, to just find myself completely alone and say, okay, let's get on with it. Who are these people and how do they do it? And what can we create together, even though we're complete strangers? You know, I work, for instance, with Antonioni, as I mentioned, before he died. Or I did three films with Manuel de Oliveira, the Portuguese director, just had his 100th birthday, I think, last year. Who's still kicking, who still does a kind of film and a half, two films a year. Or Raul Ruiz, who I've worked with several times, who I really love for the simple reason, I mean, I think he's incredibly bright and cultivated and independent, a real independent thinker. But I remember asking him, the first film I did with him was in French, and my French wasn't very good then, and people were talking so quickly, and I was just simply trying to find out, wait, did you say we're playing pool or I'm watching people play pool? Doesn't matter to me at all. I mean, my pool's okay, but which was it? And he gave me an explanation about why plane trees lose their bark in, you know, I don't know, June. And then I thought, God, I love this man. He simply won't answer a direct question. How great. And I would actually at night kind of think up questions like actor type questions I could ask him. You know, do you think my character's hard of hearing? Do you know, things like actors ask, just to hear what he'd say. For me, the experience counts more than the finished film, because any film is a gamble. Any film, you don't know if it'll be good or not. You don't know when you do it if it'll be recognized as being good, or recognized 10 years after as being good, or always thought to be terrible. Ugh. And it's something which you have very little control over, almost none. You can give a great performance in a terrible film. You can give a great performance that's completely cut. You can give a terrible performance that looks really good. You can, I mean, there are all of those possibilities. But the one possibility that's certain is you're not going to control it. And, you know, for me, I got to have a link to really great filmmakers, you know, of a few generations even older than me. People like De Oliveira or Antonioni or Mastroianni or people like that. And, you know, that to me can't be replaced.
I have to ask you, because it's, you work with Antonio since I last saw you, what that was like, because you walk on and you meet with him and you've got to come in with so many perceptions of, because a man whose career spans so many different kinds of film, what was that first conversation with him like?
Well, it's sort of a two-part answer. The first conversation was at the Mayflower Hotel, the first meeting. He came to see a play I was in called True West in 1982. And Robert Duvall, I think, had drug him there. And then he was talking to Robert and myself about a film he wanted to make called The Crew, which I don't think was ever made. It was a terrific script by Mark Peplow, who wrote The Passenger and wrote Sheltering Sky and wrote a lot of stuff. Anyway. And it was a terrific script. We talked about that. I said I would love to do it. Robert wanted to do it with some reservations and a little bit of torturing the Italians thrown in. But Robert wanted to do it. And very soon after that, he had a stroke, a massive stroke. And he lost the power of speech for many years. So when the film I ended up doing with him was a little series of short films, and his wife, Enrica, called me and asked if I would do it. And I said, yeah, absolutely, without reading it or anything. Just, I said, yeah, sure. And in fact, they said he couldn't talk. That's not quite true. He could say, that's enough. He could say, stupid.
Did he?
Yeah, he quite quickly found his tongue. Bastard, because he's stupid. He somehow recovered the power of speech on like the first day of shooting. At least of 5 or 6 syllables. But mostly he'd give the Italian for, you know, che cosa vuoi, you know, what are you doing, you know. And just give a gesture. And in that gesture you could read, it could mean it was very good, it was very powerful, he loved it. It could mean he hated it. It could mean, where is your brain? Do you even have one? It could mean everything.
Yeah. It's the treatment I'm talking to John Malkovich. As you talk about this, and I don't know if you've mentioned this much before, the directors that you work with, you really tend to have an emotional connection with, are the kinds who communicate with you in the most minimal of ways, is what you seem to be saying.
You know what? That's probably true. I never thought of it as a very good observation. It's probably true because having worked in a bunch of different languages and cultures and stuff, even in the theater, I would say this, which sounds such a perverse and maybe even idiotic statement, so much of it is just beyond language, what you do, you know. When you work with someone like Bertolucci or Raoul, who's a spectacular mover of the camera, or Antonioni, who's a sort of, I think anybody would say this, pretty much unmatched in terms of putting people in a geography, that's just something you understand, it seems to me, implicitly. It's a kind of language on its own that, if the camera comes here and does that and then booms up and then comes back down and then goes out of the room, well, it kind of tells you what you need to do. And that may be in counterpoint, or it may be in tandem, or both, even within the course of a shot. But the people I love, you know, I like very much Michael Ballhaus, the great cinematographer I did two films with. You know, I used to tell this story, but it's actually true. And when we were doing Death of a Salesman, he was the only cinematographer I ever was around who was actually ready when you got on stage. So he's actually ready to shoot. And he's just sitting there on the dolly, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, has the unfortunate name of Panzer. And he's sitting there, and, you know, I used to just to goof him. When I got to sometimes on the set, I would go around and relight a little bit to change a few gels and do this and that, and, you know, do a couple of levels and, you know, put a shutter in or out, or, you know, just do a little light relight. You know, and he'd always just sit there on the Panzer, and then when I was finished, he'd say, "Are you finished?" And I'd say, "Yes." And he goes, "Very good. I'm liking it. Shall we shoot?" The funny thing is, with him, I could always understand, as another great cameraman, Michael Fox, told me when we used to have screaming, well, I was always screaming at him, and he would just always sort of be there sort of thinking, when will this man shut up? When we were doing Les Liaisons, Dangerous Liaisons, he said to me one day, I was screaming about something, I don't know what, and he goes, "Johnny, it's not a shot. If it's not in frame, it doesn't exist." And that, to me, was the lesson that I kind of needed, because he and I got known and noted or rated or whatever in theater by doing precisely what I wanted to do all the time. That's how I acted. And that's what I got known for. But that's not what movies are, because it has to be in frame. And it often can't really be precisely what you want to do for a catholicity of reasons, to do with the camera movement, the lenses, the. You know, many actors have no interest in that. And I understand. They just want to go and do their thing, and they're actors, and they act, and they don't know what the camera does. You know, they don't know a 35 or a 135, or they don't know all that stuff, because it's not their field and it's not their interest. But that was more my interest. Why is it like that? And why are you over here instead of over there? And what does it mean? And with those directors and technicians, that to me has always been the delight of movies, how they see it, you know.
Wow. John, thanks so much. It's always great having you here. Please come
My
back.
My pleasure. I'd love it.
My guest is Thank John you. Malkovich. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, with assistance from Paul Ruiz at Argo Networks here in New York. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey, the producer. It's In the Frame. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at KCRW.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.